BBC, Whistle and I'll Come to You, written by Neil Cross. A blurry image of a small orb on a curved wire, forming part of a model of the solar system. John Hurt, Gemma Jones, Leslie Sharp, Sophie Thompson. The gently spinning pendulum of an anniversary clock beneath a glass dome. A man in late middle age with craggy, time-worn features stands pensively in the middle of a traditionally furnished dining room. He claps his hands together as if to force himself out of his reverie.
Right.
He picks up a coat and a small suitcase, then stands for a moment and stares at some framed photos of an attractive young woman, which sit beside the anniversary clock on top of a cabinet.
Yes, I'm coming.
Picking up some keys from a bookshelf, he switches off a light and is about to leave when he realizes he's forgotten something. He retrieves a woman's handbag from the dining table and uses the moment to take a final melancholy glance around the room before heading out. A pleasant-faced woman in her 60s stares vacantly out of the window of a stationary car, seemingly unaware of some fleeting activity outside. She shows no reaction as the man kisses her hand tenderly. A grandfather clock suddenly stops ticking in the now darkened dining room. Outside a modern featureless care home, Hetty, a ponytailed woman in a nurse's uniform, greets the couple.
Alice, love, welcome. Let's get you inside.
Hetty leads Alice inside.
What about the suitcases?
We'll send someone out to fetch them. One of our big, strong lads. Eh, Alice?
Outside, Alice's three suitcases sit beside a wall, a coat draped over one of them. Alice sits at the back of a large room with picture windows to two sides. It's occupied by figures sitting trance-like in high-back chairs set out in rows that face each other.
I wish you'd seen her when she was herself. I was a very lucky man. The only thing is, you do begin to think, with no children, that when you're gone, there's nothing left. A whole lifetime of loving someone just finished up. And forgotten. It all seems strangely wasteful to me, inelegant. The universe is usually so parsimonious, conservation of energy and so on. But not when it comes to love. When it comes to love, the universe is oddly profligate.
James, when did you retire?
Last year. A year before.
And what have you done since then?
I've looked after my wife.
And you've done a wonderful job. You've bathed her and fed her and read to her and did what you could. But now that job is done. Just take yourself away. Relax. Get used to the idea of having some time for yourself.
James responds to Hetty's smile and nods with a certain reluctance. Now he's combing Alice's hair.
So, they don't want me around for a few days, getting under everyone's feet, disturbing your new routines, your meal times, and so on.
He rubs some cream from a jar between his palms.
So, I decided to take a few days away. Take a peek at some of our old haunts. Take some photographs. Bring them back to show you.
He massages the cream into Alice's hands and strokes her fingers.
Maybe a stick of rock.
Alice stares blankly ahead, not registering James's presence. James leans over her and kisses her cheek.
I love you, my darling. See you soon. Call me if you need me.
James shoots a self-conscious glance at Hetty, who's standing in the far corner of the room, then whispers into his wife's ear.
Oh, whistle and I'll come to you, my lad.
As James straightens up, he glances at the zombie-like expression of a similarly aged fair-haired woman sitting next to Alice. He looks around him guiltily. Then, as he goes to leave, Alice raises a weak hand.
She spilt wine over my toes. They said, wine. My mother was a darling. She barked.
Alice's words elicit no response from the women around her, who are all wearing identical short-sleeved white gowns. Hetty holds the door open for James, and he heads out. Gentle waves lap a stretch of beach beneath brooding grey clouds. Carrying a coat and small case, James approaches a large white-painted Georgian-style hotel. He stands in front of it for a moment, as if recalling a distant memory, then ventures inside. He signs in at the reception desk.
Been to Coombe Biddeford before, have you?
Long time ago, my wife and I came here. Not long after we were married.
Was it your honeymoon?
We used to ramble. Yes, we were ramblers. I'm not quite sure what you'd call them nowadays.
Backpackers, I think. Hikers.
Not quite the same thing. But, yes, we used to picnic on the beach. Open a bottle of wine. Watch out for shooting stars.
Oh, you're an astrologer.
Astronomer. Now, astrology is Capricorn and Aquarius, tall, dark, strangers, mystic Meg and whatnot. I'm actually more of a scientist and so on.
Oh, lovely. Hi, this dog was a Gemini. Schnauzer. A little rose she was, I tell you. Into everything the minute you turned your back. So, I've got you down for a double room.
Oh, no, that's not what... No, that's not what I... I'm sorry.
Oh, no. No, I'm sorry. My fault. Let me just...
Is it a nice room?
Oh, it's a lovely room. Yes.
Well, that'll be fine.
The receptionist fetches a key.
Can I show you to the room?
Just point me in the right direction. I'm sure I'll be able to find it.
Right, you are. Up those stairs there, through the door at the top, and right along to the end.
James picks up his coat and case and makes his way slowly up a wood-panelled staircase. A glass-beaded chandelier hangs above the stairwell. James makes his way along a corridor, then down a small flight of steps. He sets down his case outside a room door and fumbles for the key. The spacious but faded room is painted a drab green. It's furnished with a traditional brass bedstead and net curtains hang at a high bay window. A tea maker sits on a wooden chest of drawers. James throws down his coat and tosses the room key onto a bedside table, then sits down wearily on the edge of the bed. He leans forward to peer into an ensuite bathroom, then takes in his gloomy surroundings with a doleful expression, before getting purposefully to his feet. Opening his case on top of the bed, he starts to unpack. Now he's wearing an anorak over a thick knitted polo neck sweater as he heads downstairs to the reception desk.
Sorry, if I could just... What time does the restaurant actually open?
Open for dinner from 7 p.m.
Excellent.
Off to work up an appetite.
James answers with a smile. Steps set against a rock wall lead down to the beach facing the hotel. James trots down them and looks out to sea as he reaches the bottom. An oil tanker sits on the distant horizon. He sets off along the beach. Now he's sitting on a dune, holding a flask cup and gazing out across the calm, sunlit sea. He sips thoughtfully from the cup. Then, as he takes another sip, something catches his eye a short distance away. Putting down the cup, he kneels in the sand and reaches into a pocket for a penknife. He opens the penknife's blade and uses it to carefully prise a gold wedding ring from the roots of a clump of marum grass. He examines the ring with a puzzled expression before getting to his feet and going to retrieve his anorak. He slips the ring into one of the anorak's pockets. He glances up at the clouds, which appear to be growing heavier, then hoists his backpack over his shoulder and sets off along the beach. Walking at a steady pace, he senses something behind him. As he looks over his shoulder, he catches sight of a spectral white figure some distance behind. He looks back again, and with growing unease, quickens his pace, first to a slow trot, then to a steady jog. The figure continues to follow him at the same distance. Reaching the bottom of the steps by the rock wall, James looks back at a deserted beach that stretches for miles into the distance. More at ease now, he dismisses his unsettling experience with a wry shake of his head as he climbs the steps and heads back to the hotel. He unlocks his room door and steps inside. Now, sitting on the edge of the bed, he retrieves the wedding ring from his anorak. He puts on a pair of glasses and examines it, then takes it into the bathroom, where he switches on a light beneath a mirror-fronted cabinet in order to study it more closely. The ring is edged with a delicate circle pattern.
How long were you alone, waiting for someone to find you?
James tries to clean the ring by rubbing it with his thumb, then blows on it. The ring bears a Latin inscription.
Quis est ist qui venit? Who is this? Who is coming? Who is coming?
James looks at his thoughtful expression in the bathroom mirror, then shuffles slowly back into the bedroom. He places the ring and then his glasses beside the room key on the marble-topped bedside table. Pulling a mobile from his trouser pocket, he sits down on the edge of the bed as he dials. His hand grips the bedstead as he waits for his call to be answered.
Oh, I'm very well. I just thought I'd give you a call. How is my girl?
Oh, she's fine. She's quiet. She's content. Don't fret. Enjoy the break.
I'm sorry. Give her my love, won't you? Thank you.
No problem. Now go and relax.
Hetty ends the call, then goes to Alice, who's staring into the mid-distance.
He sends his love. He's missing you.
She leans in close.
He does adore you.
Alice shows no response. In his hotel bedroom, James gets slowly to his feet and walks across to the window. He stands for a moment, staring out of it. Then he becomes aware of a ceramic bust beside him, positioned so that it also appears to be looking out of the window. He fixes it with a stern stare.
Time to eat.
Waves lap at the base of white chalk cliffs. James sits at a table in the hotel's cold, uninviting dining room, his thoughts interrupted by a small boy careering in between the darkwood tables before obeying his parents' imploring pleas to behave. James dips a chip into a splodge of tomato sauce beside a piece of battered fish and chews it half-heartedly. Returning to his room, James unlocks the door and lets himself in. Now, wearing a dressing gown, James brushes his teeth at the sink in the bathroom. A wall light casts a dim glow as James climbs into bed and pulls the sheets up around him. He sits propped against a pillow, his arms across his body. He picks up the ring from the bedside table and turns it over between his fingers as he examines it again. Then he sets it down, puts on his glasses, picks up a hardback book, and opens it at a bookmarked page. The howling wind distracts him, and he glances towards the window. Out of the corner of his eye, he catches sight of the ceramic bust, which appears to be fixing him with a cherubic smile. A bedside clock shows the time at 2:25, and James is still sitting up in bed with his book open, but appears to have dozed off. Disturbed by a noise, he remains perfectly still, staring into the darkness. He closes his book and places it with his glasses on the bedside table, then switches off the wall light and lies down. A persistent scratching noise arouses his curiosity, and he props himself up on an elbow. He glances across at the window. Heavy drapes block out all light, apart from a narrow band of light above the pelmet rail. The ceramic bust, cast in half shadow, appears to be looking directly at him. James switches on the wall light. He looks over the side of the bed and picks up his heavy book before leaning further over to peer underneath. There's nothing there. James's face bears a fearful, perplexed expression as he puts down the book and sits up in bed. He glances again at the bust. In half light, its smile more closely resembles a malevolent sneer. Unnerved by it, James climbs out of bed and turns it to face the window. Getting back into bed, James scans the room uneasily before switching off the light. He plumps up his pillow and settles down on his side. Sleep proves elusive, and after a short while, he leans across to switch on the light. Leaving the light on, he settles his head back on the pillow and finally falls asleep. An eyelid flickers open. James awakes in pitch darkness. He lies motionless for a moment, then reaches for a cord pull and switches the light on. Propping himself up on an elbow, he checks the light, switching it on and off several times. Nervously, portentously, he turned slowly to glance across the room at the bust. It still faces the window. He lies down slowly on his side, staring at the ring on the bedside table. Next morning, he appears at reception in an open-neck shirt.
Morning. Sleep well?
Oh, very well, thank you. Actually, not really.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Was it the storm? What a ruckus.
It was...
He leans on the reception desk.
I think I may have a rat in my room.
A rat?
I heard it scratching all night.
Did you see it?
No. I got the feeling that it was trapped in the wall. Or under the floorboards, maybe.
Oh, Mr. Parkin, I'm so sorry. Would you like to change your room?
Oh, no. But I assume you'll...
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. We'll look into it straight away.
Not to worry too much. Old building. Actually, they're amazing creatures, rats. Machines for survival. Admirable in their own way. I expect it was driven in by the cold. Anyway, not to worry.
Well, thank you for your kindness.
Not at all. Breakfast is...
Oh, it's being served right now.
Excellent. Oh, could somebody look at my bedside lamp as well? A loose connection, I think.
Oh, absolutely. No problem at all.
Thank you.
The receptionist's smile vanishes the moment James's back is turned. In the deserted dining room, he sits at a window table and seems too preoccupied to enjoy his cooked breakfast. He puts fork to mouth with little enthusiasm. Now, wearing his anorak and with his backpack slung over his shoulder, he heads down the steps to the beach. As he steps onto the sand, he hesitates and a look of indecision crosses his face as he stares at the vast expanse of empty dune-backed beach stretching out before him. He turns slowly on his heels and heads back up the steps. A chambermaid shakes out a sheet as she makes James's bed. The bust has its back to the window. Sitting on a bench, James pours himself a drink from his flask. The white blades of offshore wind turbines turn briskly on the blurry horizon. Sunlight filters weakly through the net curtains at James's hotel bedroom window. In the cheerless dining room, James sits alone, the hotel's only diner. Branches, whipped up by a strong wind, brush against the window he's sitting beside. With a heavy heart, James picks up his knife and fork. Viewed through a glazed door, a nurse helps Alice into bed at the care home. Alice lies flat on her back as the nurse covers her body with bedclothes. James makes his way back to his room along the hotel's bleak, shadowy corridors. Reaching the door to room 17, he takes the key from his pocket, but seems reluctant to enter. With a heavy sigh, he unlocks the door and steps inside with a palpable sense of trepidation. Now he's sitting up in bed in his pajamas, reading. A noise causes him to lift his eyes from his book. He looks instinctively at the bust, which is half turned to face him. James bookmarks a page, then closes the book and gets out of bed. With a hint of irritation, he turns the bust to face the window. He then freezes for a moment, as if listening for a noise, before scurrying back to bed. He freezes again, listening intently, then picks up his book and opens it at the page he bookmarked. Later, James is fast asleep in an upright position when a noise awakens him. The room is in darkness. James reaches for the light's cord pull. He stares in horror as the bedroom door shudders with the effort of someone or something trying to open it. The doorknob turns slowly. James is rigid with fear as the door is jiggled against its lock from the other side. James notices a shadow at the bottom of the door. James is shaking with fear. He sees the shadow move away. He screws up his eyes with the sheer physical agony of his terror. Then the room falls silent. Sometime later, James has dropped off to sleep beneath crumpled bedclothes. He stirs with a twitching start, but his eyes remain closed. In daylight, James walks slowly along the beach towards a hazy figure. At the care home, Alice bears a beatific smile as she clutches a flower posy. Then, sitting in front of a fireplace, she holds her arms as if cradling a baby. On the beach, the figure's wearing a flowing white robe, and a small child is slumped asleep in a wooden chair. Then, a black crow and a hand partially buried in the sand. Alice cowers in a corner, sobbing, and a doll's porcelain head smashes. James wakes suddenly, with beads of perspiration on his brow. It's early morning. The hotel is still in darkness as James makes his way gropingly down the stairs. He feels his way along a wall towards the glazed double entrance doors and finds them locked. Tottering through the murky blackness, he turns to glance back at the staircase, then catches his knee on a sturdy chair. He tries to open the door to the dining room and finds that locked as well.
Excuse me!
He goes to another door.
Excuse me! Hello!
The receptionist appears.
Oh, so sorry you got a fright. It's my son, he's got the flu, it's the weather.
It's all right. Well, it's not all right, is it? One of your guests tried to get into my room last night. I was 2 seconds from calling the police. Thank God I locked the door.
You're the only guest currently staying with us.
No, there's another couple, the young child.
They checked out yesterday.
Really?
Afraid they did, yes.
Well, who was knocking at my door? Could it have been you?
I stayed at home, my son flew.
Another member of staff? Not only was I the only guest in the hotel, I was the only person in the hotel. I was completely on my own all night in an empty hotel.
The season, the weather, it's so quiet. I'm so sorry.
Is it even legal? And what happened if there was a fire?
Mr. Parkin, I'm really sorry, my son.
Oh, he's got the flu, yes. So who was banging on my door?
I don't know who it could have been.
Well, somebody was.
Could it have been a dream?
A chance would be a fine thing.
Well, this building's not as young as she was. Perhaps it was a ghost.
A ghost? A discorporate human personality that has survived bodily death?
One of those, yes, if you like.
Well, I have to admit that I've never seen a ghost, so my empirical evidence is zero. But what I have seen is the opposite. A body that has outlasted the existence of the personality, and that is far, far more horrifying than any spook or ghoul you could ever hope to glimpse, believe me. There is nothing inside us. No ghost in these machines. Man is matter, and matter rots. Oh, and I do hope your son gets better.
Wearing his anorak and carrying his backpack, James heads down onto the beach. He glances in the direction he walked last time, then sets off in the opposite direction. He crouches to pick up a shell from a puddle in the sand. It appears to evoke a memory, and he examines it for a few moments before tossing it away. Moving on, he comes across a wooden chair lying askew in the sand. It's similar to the one he saw in his dream. He approaches it guardedly for a closer look, but continues walking, affording it a brief glance back over his shoulder. Pillars of rock tower above him as he walks through a cleft between them. The pale rocks are stained green around their bases. James walks with a steady stride. Suddenly, up ahead, the figure in the white flowing robe comes into view. James slows down. His confidence swiftly fades. Coming to a stop, he stares at the figure, then back at the way he's come. He turns on his heels. Walking slowly at first, his pace soon quickens. He glances over his shoulder. The figure stands a short distance behind him. James starts to run. The figure remains close behind him, despite the fact that every time he glances back, the figure is standing still. Reaching the bottom of the steps, he doubles over, totally exhausted. As he straightens up, he looks back down the beach. The figure has gone. At the care home, Hetty receives a phone call.
James, how are you, my love? You sound out of breath.
Yes, well, I've just been for a ramble. Is she well?
I'd say she was missing you.
You couldn't possibly put her on. I'd just like to... Oh, thank you.
Call for you, my love. She can hear you, James. Gossip away, I'm not listening.
Hello, darling.
I just wanted to say hello, see how you are.
I'm staying in our old hotel, do you remember it?
Do you remember the wine when we first came? I think it was Sarsen's. We did laugh, though, didn't we? We laughed and...
Alice shows no flicker of recognition as Hetty holds the phone to her ear.
Listen, don't worry about me, okay? I'm fine. Just wish you were here. So many happy memories.
Alice stares blankly ahead.
I'll see you soon. Bye. Bye now.
Hetty takes back the phone and listens to hear that the call has ended, then notices Alice rubbing her ring finger.
Don't fret, my love. You'll see him soon. You will. Don't fret.
Alice scratches at the dip of her gown in her lap, and Hetty holds her hand comfortingly. As James arrives back at the hotel, the receptionist trots downstairs.
Oh, Mr. Parkin.
I'm off for an early bed because I shall be leaving in the morning.
Well, you're not cutting your stay short because of last night. We could change your room.
Oh, no, it's not that. No, in all honesty, it's not. Well, it sounds pathetic, but I'm afraid I miss my wife.
It's not pathetic at all. It's lovely. You're very lucky. How long did you say you were married?
I was 21 and she was 19. A lifetime, really.
First love.
First and only. Well,
Yes, of course. Good night. Sleep tight.
Oh, your son. Is he better at all? He is better, I hope.
Not to worry, Mr. Parkin. My mum's looking after him. You won't be alone tonight.
Oh, good. Well, not that it matters all that much, but... Well, it's nice to know.
James treads slowly, wearily up the stairs. A sense of foreboding grips him as he approaches his room. He stands in front of the door and appears transfixed by the tarnished brass numerals fixed to it. He closes his eyes and bows his head. Now he stares at his reflection in the mirrored cabinet as he brushes his teeth in the bathroom. He stops suddenly and listens, then continues brushing. He winds a clock at his bedside, then goes across to the window and checks that it's securely fastened. The ceramic bust is consigned to the bottom of a wardrobe.
Whoever thought you'd be a homely knick-knack? A madman? Or a sadist?
James plugs the gap at the bottom of the door with a pillow. Then he checks the door is locked and removes the key. He settles down in bed to read his book, but can't relax. His eyes are drawn to the empty shelf where the bust usually sits. Then he looks over at the wardrobe. The wind rustles a sheet of paper in the grate of the room's old-fashioned iron fireplace. James picks up the ring he found from his bedside table and studies it thoughtfully. As he returns to his book, a creaking sound makes him look up. Two small shafts of light are still visible either side of the pillow he's wedged in the gap beneath the door. James takes a few deep breaths in an effort to remain calm. Removing his reading glasses, James listens intently to a scratching noise. His eyes follow the skirting board around the room to the door. He watches open-mouthed as the pillow slides silently through the gap.
Go away! Go away, please! Go away!
The doorknob turns slowly. The door rattles violently.
Please, 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 go away! Go away! Go away!
There's shadowy movement beneath the door. Then two hands appear, crab-like, through the gap. James buries his head in a pillow as the hands withdraw.
Please, Lord! Please, Lord! Please, Lord!
The light goes out. James lifts his head to see Alice in her care home gown, kneeling at the foot of his bed, smiling at him. She starts to crawl towards him.
I'm still here. I'm still here. I'm still here.
I'm still here.
I'm here.
A twitching hand slumps to the floor, the nails of its stiff fingers scratching spasmodically at the bare wood. Alice lies on her back in bed at the care home. A tear rolls down her cheek as she stares up at the ceiling. There's a rap on James's bedroom door. The door opens, and the receptionist looks in. She approaches the bed hesitantly. James is lying on his back, dead, one arm hanging over the side of the bed. The receptionist gasps. At the care home, Alice is sitting in the middle of a row of white-gowned patients. They're all staring straight ahead. Hetty appears in a doorway, and Alice turns her head to look at her. Then, Alice looks over her shoulder and smiles. As Hetty walks into the room, Alice's chair is empty.
Whistle and I am gone.